Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Anything that makes you think, that makes you think outside the box, can make you creative. I think that the people that say they aren't creative just haven't found their creativity yet. They haven't found that joy in whatever they want. Because creative doesn't mean that you can do it perfectly. Creative just means that that is your outlet. That is how you express yourself.
Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust too that you enjoyed my recent conversations with Joel Kletke of Case Study Buddy and with Emmy Award-winning producer and director Nick Nanton. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast today as my guest, Heather Lee Dyer, who is the award-winning author of the young adult science fiction series Recycling Humanity and the Delta Fringe series. And she's also author of the non-fiction book Creativity Over Perfection. The world needs your book. She's also a poet, a space enthusiast, and a fangirl of most things sci-fi, romance, and paranormal. Heather's had a really interesting background. She was raised in the mountains of Montana on a hippie commune. Her mother worked for the Apollo program. And today Heather's just as comfortable hiking in the mountains as she is exploring the downtown streets of the large cities that she visits. She's loved writing from a very early age and says that we should all focus our energy on what brings us joy. A quick promotional message from our sponsor, InnovaBiz, where we help coaches and consultants build professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal clients. Now, to get absolute clarity on who your ideal client is, have a look at our Marketing Master mini class. In less than 30 minutes, you'll gain absolute clarity on who your ideal client is and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an enduring, engaging relationship. Access the Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and you don't even have to give away your email. In our discussion today, Heather talked to me about how to get started with anything by focusing on the joy rather than the imperfections. We talked about mind mapping and using mind mapping in particular to outline a book or any project for that matter. And she shared her view that everyone is creative in their very unique way and told us how to amplify your creative strengths. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Heather Lee Dyer. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Boise, Idaho in the USA, Heather Lee Dyer, who's the author of the Recycling Humanity series and the Delta Fringe series, both of which are fiction book series, and also Creativity Over Perfection, which is her first non-fiction book. So welcome to the podcast, Heather. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Azul Taronas, who was our guest on episode 230 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we get you on the InnovaBuzz podcast and have a conversation with you. So a big hello to Azul.
Yes, he's one of my favorite people in the world.
Yeah, and we had a great conversation. Now, you've got a really interesting background. You spent a large part of your childhood in a hippie commune in the mountains of Montana, and your mother had a top secret clearance in the NASA Apollo program, which is pretty impressive that she managed to do that at the same time living in a commune. So it's given you a diverse love for nature, space travel, tech, and all things reading and writing, and that you believe everyone is creative and creativity is a necessary part of our lives. So that really fascinates me, and I'm looking forward to digging into that some more today. But before we get on to that, tell us a little bit more about your background, in particular how you discovered your love of writing and how you ended up writing fiction novels.
Well, as you said, I was raised on a hippie commune, so we had a lot of freedom. My mom had just quit her job at NASA. She worked on the Apollo 1 program and moved us. We each had a cabin up in the mountains. We had 93 acres. I was between the ages of 4 and 10 while I was up there. I had all the freedom to just wander as long as I had my bear whistle on so that in case of emergency, they could hear us. I learned to read and write up there. And she had in our cabin, we had a ton of books and mostly science fiction, fantasy, some mystery. And we read a lot. She taught me to read. I was reading by 4 and I loved reading. And because I had so much freedom, I think I was kind of what they would describe as a wild child. They probably these days would have put me on some medicines. So to keep me under control every night, she would have me write out in a journal of what I did, what I saw, what I smelled, what I did during the day up in the mountains. I had like a favorite tree that I would go play, make pretend games, that kind of thing. So I was journaling at a young age and then started into poetry once we got into school. They taught us about haikus and all that in first and second, third grade. So I have been writing all my life. She was a single mother, so she would take classes at universities as she could. So whenever she went to class, I went to class with her because there was nowhere else for me to go. So I just sat in the class and listened, and most of them were, she had a major in communications, so there's a journalism major. And so a lot of my poetry got published in these little journals that the universities put out. Because I was always there and writing, and I loved it, and it kept me under control, kept my anger. I guess I was an angry child, just running around, I guess. So I loved reading and writing. Then we had to move out of the mountains, and I had a horrible experience at a school in third grade where the teacher thought I was dumb, basically, and unteachable. Right. It was a country school where they combined like 4th through 6th grade, and her son was in my class. So I got picked on and beat up a lot because I was a dreamer. I was going from all this freedom to a classroom setting that didn't allow that freedom. And my mom finally took me to the school board, and the school board sent me to a psychologist or some specialist who did an IQ test on me and found out that both my parents had IQs of over 160, and I had an IQ at age 9 of 145. So the teacher was not very happy because she was proved wrong. And life got worse for me after that because she was reprimanded. And I was beat up so bad one day that we actually moved to the big city of Missoula, Montana. And anybody from the area knows it is the big city, but it's not very big. But I loved it there. And it was a healing time. it took a while. I stopped writing. I stopped dreaming. I stopped doing my poetry after the whole incident at the other school. And it took a while for it to come back. But I finally started writing again and all through high school. And no matter what I did, I was writing. I was either a secretary writing technical. I'm a legal assistant now. So I write technical and legal documents. And it wasn't till probably 8 years ago or so I discovered NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month. And that's when I started writing full novels, going from poetry and essays and short stories to full novels.
Okay.
Yeah, so
yeah,
I've been writing forever.
Yeah, well, that's a really fascinating childhood, and it's really sad. And I know I had some experiences like that in terms of, you know, not myself. Well, I did, I suppose, in some ways, but with my children who are very intelligent, and they were in situations also where, particularly my son, where, you know, they were dismissive, the teachers, and when they were proven wrong, the situation became even worse. So I can certainly understand that, and it must be very traumatic for the person at the center of it. So well done for getting through that. And how did you kind of get back into the writing when I guess you probably thought this is all the writing and the dreaming and your creative nature was probably why people felt you were different and they were picking on you because you were different. How did you kind of then reconcile all that and go back to it and say, well, actually, I want to do this because I love doing it?
Yeah, it's difficult because I don't think my story is too unusual from other people. Other people have issues throughout their life, events in their life, people in their lives that kind of squelch their creativity. So in third grade, the healing part came from having good, helpful teachers when we did move, knowing that my mom was always there, that she moved us because she knew what was happening, that she would be there to protect me. We had some good English teachers that would just let me creative write without editing me. And so at that time, that was enough to keep writing. And then once college hit, and then I had babies, of course, and that kind of takes up a lot of your time. but I'm not complete unless I'm writing. So I always found some way to write. Like I would write stories for my kids, or I started a public charter school, which because I was homeschooling my kids, and that was a very different kind of writing because I had to write the charter and the articles and meet with the governor, and it was a huge project, but it kept me writing, it kept my mind going, and so that was what got me through that. And then when we got through that, the kids were older, they're teenagers don't really want to be around their parents. They want to be with their friends. So then there's a different kind of a creative loss in my life because I didn't have my kids there. And, you know, kids just kind of bring everything to life when they're around. So I started writing poetry again, and I won a national poetry contest on my disability, my lupus. It's called an invisible disability, and or invisible is illness, I think was the title of it. And I won first place in the national contest. And so that those little boosts kind of help keep you writing. And then I started getting sicker, my lupus, I started getting sicker with that. And one of our senators from our state wrote a letter to me congratulating me for this contest that I won. I don't know how they found out, but they took the time to write a letter, and That was just kind of an amazing emotional boost for someone who was, at that time, I was barely getting out of bed, barely journaling, barely making it to work. And that's when, so that helped a little bit. So all these little opportunities, all these little boosts kept helping me keep writing, keep learning, learning story structure and learning more, more than just poetry. And then my doctors, that's when my doctors gave me the diagnosis that there was nothing else they could do for me. And if I didn't get any better, all my organs would shut down in 2 years. So I had about 2 years to get things together or figure something out. So after all I'd been through, I was like, I am not going to go down without a fight. So I would sit in my bed and write. And I did the NaNoWriMo. And I wrote my first book in bed most of the time. 50,000 words in 1 month is what NaNoWriMo is. So I finished a 50,000 word book in 1 month in bed. And it was amazing to me to do that. That was a creative boost. And that taught me to celebrate those little, well, it's a big deal, but those little opportunities, those little accomplishments that happen. And after that, I was addicted and I kept writing novels. And I ended up, I was only going to write two novels. And then it became a trilogy. And then that first one ended up being five novels. So, I did NaNoWriMo 6 years in a row. So I wrote six books. And then after that, it was just part of me, the writing, the creativity. I would get ideas from, work. I worked at a juvenile correction system and, the state juvenile correction. So it's like the felons of kids under 21, and some of them were extremely creative. So I figured if they could do it, I could just keep going. And then I was able to write a couple of books a year and not wait for NaNoWriMo. So I just waited for those. Every time there's a low point and I think, oh my goodness, I can't just go any further. Something would come up to boost my confidence and my energy levels and my creativity. And that also helped heal my lupus. I'm 6-8 years later, I'm still here. I'm still having issues with my lupus, but I'm able to work. I'm able to write. I've gone back to school. I'm working on a NASA project at school. So I found, if you can find those things that interest you, that just make you, I don't know if you guys, do you guys have the show Marie Kondo over there?
She's quite famous here as well.
I don't agree with the whole book thing. As you can see behind me, I have millions of books and she limits that. But she does. I do like how she says that everything needs to bring you joy, needs to bring you. And I think that's the same way with whatever creativity you may possess in your business. Every business needs creativity. You can't be run an entrepreneurship or a business or any kind of brick and mortar or online business without creativity. And you need to find the one that gives you joy, because of times like I've gone through, and I know there's many others out there with other diseases, other abusive situations, other events in life that happen that can try to stop you in your tracks. And there are many, many times that I have thought I just going to lay on the couch and give up. And something else comes along to encourage me, Azul has been a big part of that too this past year. I've had a rough year with my lupus, and he's the thing that the universe or whoever you believe in sent me this year to keep me going.
Hmm. Well, that's a fascinating story, and congratulations on all the success you've had there and sort of driving yourself on in terms of, I think there's a really good message there in terms of focusing on the things that bring you joy, whatever that might be. And I understand about hanging onto the books. My wife keeps saying, you've got all these books in the bookshelf here. Why don't I clear that out? I find it hard to throw away books too.
Yeah, my husband actually, it's a well-insulated room because he built on three full walls, bookshelves from floor to ceiling of books. And they make good insulation for future podcasting and interviews. And but he's always asking me, have you read all these? I was like, yeah, actually I have. I have one bookshelf that is a to-be-read bookshelf, but most of them I have written or read, sorry.
Hmm. Yeah, it's quite fascinating, isn't it, when you think back and see all the books in the bookshelf and you think, oh, I've read most of those. But
yeah.
So how did you transition then from those fiction books into writing your first nonfiction book?
Oh, my goodness.
And why did you switch to nonfiction?
That was so difficult. Oh, you can't even imagine. So I found Azul. I met Azul. Well, I listened to him on a podcast, and that's how we met. He offered a half hour of a coaching session, book coaching session with him, and free one. So I took him up on it, of course. I'm always looking for those opportunities. So in that half hour that I talked with him, and before that, listening to the podcast and what he had to say he was talking about creative writing and his nonfiction book, I came up with the seeds of an idea for a nonfiction book. And one of my friends, who's an editor, I have a lot of editor friends, which is a good thing to have, especially when you doubt yourself. I told her I would never write a nonfiction book because I didn't know what to say. I didn't know I had any expertise to put into a nonfiction book. I didn't have anything to say. It's so much easier for me because I started out that way, writing fiction, because you can make up characters, you can make up situations, you can put them in peril, you can kill them off. You can't do that with nonfiction. But this idea came into my head while I was talking with Azul, because we both have the same, we both believe the same on creativity and how schools can kind of kill that creativity. And he became my book coach. They selected me for his free course, to have his course for free. He has a writing course that goes from idea to publishing. And the podcaster, John Broman and Azul, chose me to have that for free. So I went through that and then joined his Facebook group. And now I'm part of his mastermind, Authors Who Lead. And he helped me through that writing of that nonfiction book. And I don't think I could have done it without him, because I found out that writing fiction is so much different than nonfiction. I thought, oh, this is easy. It's only going to have to be 30 to 40,000 words, right, for a nonfiction book. But those words, even though it was half of what I write for a normal book, were more difficult because nonfiction books are organized differently. You can organize them all sorts of ways. You can organize them with a timeline or by subject. There's just too many choices. And he had me mind map, like where you put in the middle your main idea and branch out. And I think I did probably four or five of those for that book. just because I had too many ideas and I was going in all different directions and I didn't know how to organize it. So he coached me through that and how to kind of narrow it down to what I had. And then once I had that, he was like, nope, now you need to put more of yourself into it. It's because you don't want to write just a how-to book. I wasn't wanting to write just a how-to book because I'm not a writing expert like David Farland or, you know, one of the big time, you know, story writers. So mine was more of, I added more of those stories of, you know, growing up in the hippie commune. My first memory of being, my first memory at 2 years old of being in the Colorado State Penitentiary visiting room, visiting my father who had been incarcerated for 2 years. And so I added those kind of things to my nonfiction book with the advice of Asul to make it more interesting and more relatable. People could relate to, oh my goodness, she went through this, but still she kept writing, that kind of thing. That was my main purpose on this first book.
And so you titled it Creativity Over Perfection. So what's the core message?
Basically, if you're going to aim for perfection, you are never going to get there because none of us ever are perfect. And I know I'm coming from an, I'm not like Stephen King or, you know, J.K. Rowling, that kind of thing, but I have been, I'm addicted to going to writers' conferences and sci-fi conferences. So I've met a lot of big name writers and editors, and all of them have doubts on their own writing, and they have doubts on if they can keep coming up with new ideas. And because of that, that gives those of us who are starting out that are amateurs that don't do it for a full-time living hope. And they always, always say in every conference, you can just bet one speaker will say, you've just got to write that first dirty draft. And that to me was a relief because it means you don't have to be perfect. Even after my first book went through 14 edits, just because it was my first book and I was, I had several editor friends and it went through three or four editors. And now I have a better, I have a clean draft, but that book Creativity or Perfection was my way of telling people you don't strive for perfection or you'll never get it done. You just need to get it down on paper. And like, I don't know who it's attributed to. Like they say, you can't edit something that's not there. So just get it down. And I think that translates to other creativities, art, music, businesses. If entrepreneurs waited until their business was perfectly set up with the perfect website, the perfect, you know, 1-5 year goal plan, they would never get off the ground because they're not gonna, it's not gonna be perfect the first time around. You're always going to be learning. You're always going to be editing. You're going to, I learned so much at these different conferences that I'm always growing. And I think that's the way everybody should look at it, whether you're writing a book or building a business.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. And, you know, you mentioned some of the big names in novel writing. I would imagine that they would be the first to admit that their first novel was probably nowhere near as good as their most recent one. So the thing really is that we all learn by learn a lot by doing things and by then interacting with other people and getting feedback on the work that we've put out there, that creative work. I think my podcast, you know, podcasting or doing video is very similar. I know a lot of people come to me and say, oh, I could never be as good as you on the podcast. And I say, well, you should listen to some of my very first podcast episodes because, you could probably, in fact, I'm convinced you could be as good as that without even trying, and you'll get better as you go along.
Right.
So it's really all about doing. So there's a saying, and I don't know who this is attributed to, but it's one that I really like. It's you don't have to be great to start, but you do have to start to be great.
Right. Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm. All right. So now one of the things you mentioned before is around mind mapping. I'm a huge fan of mind mapping. I've been doing mind mapping for 30 years, I think. Well, first heard Tony Buzan speak at an event here, which was quite amazing, and I was inspired to get into mind mapping, and I've been doing it on computers and that. So how does do you do mind mapping for your fiction novels as well?
I do. I actually have kind of combined my I'm an outliner, so I've kind of combined a bunch of different techniques that I've gotten from different people over the years and kind of made my own. But I have a, it's covered with a blanket for sound now, but I have a, one of those big, huge papers on a stand that I write on, and I outline, I do a mind map first just to get my ideas, my characters, my settings, any quirky ideas I've thought of. And then I, again, use another page of the big, huge piece of paper. I used to use whiteboards, but my grandbabies end up erasing them. So I've had to go to paper so they can't erase them. Yeah. And then I outline on this big piece of paper. I know that sounds weird, but it's very tactile for me. And I like the colors and the writing it out by hand. My first book was completely written by hand because I would write on my lunch hour and I didn't have a computer at work. So now I use computer for writing, but I always start with the mind map and a written outline for like kind of a like they use for scripts, more of a script outline. With the except I use four boxes instead of the three that they use, but and then that translates. Then I use a program called Scrivener, and I put my ideas and outlines in that. But I always start out with the the handwritten mind maps. I just it's freeing. I think it's maybe goes back to the the mountain days where I can just do what I want and you can visually see what you're thinking.
Hmm. So do you draw on the mind map or do you use words or a combination?
I do, not like not like the action, because I can't draw anything other than stick figures. But I do draw the main ideas and names, come up with names for my starships, that kind of thing. I have a whole kind of Bible of what my starships are named and all my different series and what they look like. And so I'll put those on the mind map. But actual drawing, like scenes, like you would for a screenwriting, I don't do pictures just because that's not my talent.
Yes, I can relate to that very well. I mean, my stick people are pretty awful as well. So I think, I struggle with stick people, let alone getting something else on board. But I think there's something to be said for activating that visual component of your creativity, of your brain, and expressing it in that way. And also particularly in other contexts, I mean, maybe not in writing, because you've got to translate that then into words that paint a picture for the reader. But in other aspects, I find it sometimes really useful to have an image that represents a whole idea that maybe with words you'd be writing several pages.
Yes, that's true. More like a vision board kind of thing. And I've also used mind mapping for my business as well. I have a life coach that does that. And so we'll go through and we'll will mind map out kind of like what I've done, what I want to do, what I think is possible, and put it all visually on mind map paper. I think even for business stuff like that, I think it's helpful.
Hmm. All right, that's great. Now, we've talked quite a bit about creativity and writing, and in a business sense, there's, you know, we're actually called upon really to write a lot, because putting information out into the internet so that our ideal clients can find us and find out more about us, learn about us. And yet a lot of the times I hear people saying, well, I don't know what to write. I'm not creative. I'm not a writer. What's your response to that? I'm intrigued to hear from a writer, and maybe I can steal some ideas in terms of getting back to those people that say that to me.
Oh, yes. So I interviewed the number one major crimes detective in our valley, just for fun, because I have contacts like that, and it gives me ideas for books. So I interview different people in the community. And she turned around to me after explaining to me how she could walk in a crime scene and see what's missing, or she could walk in a crime scene and she could see exactly what went on without anybody explaining anything. And she explained to me how she can talk to these suspects and get answers out of them that nobody else could for days. And then she turned around to me and she's like, I wish I was creative like you and I could write or do something creative. And I had to stop and I had to like take a deep breath for a second, because I believe everybody is creative. I believe everybody was born creative in some way or another. And so I explained to her, you know, your sixth sense, your way of being able to visualize what others can't, and being able to verbalize and know the minds of those people, that is a creativity in itself. It may not, you might not be able to write like I can. You might not be able to draw or play the piano. Those are things that people think are traditionally creative endeavors. And it made her think. It made her think that, well, maybe, you know, she's probably in her 50s, and she still was thinking she was not creative at all. So I'm hoping that she has found something. I mean, because we have hobbies and stuff, and those, anything that makes you think outside of the box can make you creative. I think that the people that say they aren't creative just haven't found their creativity yet. They haven't found that joy in whatever they want, because creative doesn't mean that you can do it perfectly. Creative just means that that is your outlet. That is your, that is how you express yourself. Like when I was little, my mom would make me journal so that she could figure out what I did all day. But it also helped me understand the world and understand why, you know, things happen. You know, I'd write it down and she could explain it. So those people that say they're not creative, they just haven't found their creativity, and they just need to, I always say, travel, or there's many ways to find creativity. I don't know if you want to go into that right now or not, but that's one of my passions, is that, oh, it just drives me crazy when people say they're not creative, because everybody is creative in some way or another. I mean, I can't knit or crochet or do anything more than stick figures, but I can write. So does that mean I'm not creative because I can't do those other things? That's what I ask people. We're just all different.
Yeah. And that's, I guess that, I mean, in my mind, there's the creativity on the one hand, and on the other hand, there's skills like the ones you've mentioned, you know, knitting or drawing or even writing as a skill, or playing the piano or painting. They're all skills, and as such, we can actually learn those skills.
Exactly. Right. Now,
it doesn't mean that we'll be the best in the world at an individual skill, but we can learn it. And I think it comes back to what you mentioned about joy, in that do we have enough joy with learning that to be motivated to learn that skill to a level that, you know, we're competent perhaps, and it adds to our bag of tricks, our bag of skills that add to our portfolio, to our creativity portfolio, or, you know, do we see it as a chore? And that, I think that's where, that's the one side of the creativity equation. The other side is, as you've said, you know, we've all got creativity.
Yes.
Even just staying alive, we have to be creative.
That's true.
Creative to protect ourselves. Yep.
Exactly. Mm.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit more, because I know you talk quite a bit about keeping that creative tank full, as so to speak. So tell us a little bit more about some of those suggestions. So you mentioned travel.
Yes. So I'm always asked that question because I mentor middle grade and high schoolers also. And that is probably one of the number one questions I get is, you know, how can I be creative? How can I get ideas? How do you get ideas? And when I go to conferences, people are always asking the authors and artists, how do you get your ideas? And that's where Azul and I agree on writer's block, that writer's block is not a lack of ideas. It's a, you have too many ideas, you don't know what to do with them kind of thing, kind of a blockage, and you got to get them out. So travel is one that I have discovered in the last couple of years. I've gotten addicted to traveling by myself, because that way I don't have to worry about, and my husband doesn't like traveling anyway, so it works out pretty good. I can write while I travel. I can talk, just walking down the streets. You notice more when you're by yourself. I can go to museums and places that would inspire me creatively, but my husband probably wouldn't want to go to. I like to visit space centers and space museums because I write sci-fi, and that's why I've joined the our university NASA microgravity team, because at the end of it, we get to go to a NASA space center. So,
oh wow!
Hopefully, I will be one of those six selected for that, and those kind of things. Depending on what your creativity is, doing anything new, or especially something maybe opposite or different than what you do, I found has inspires creativity. As a writer of science fiction space opera, it's not like I can go out in space and just, you know, hang out there. So I just do things that, activities that I would not normally do, visit coffee shops or businesses, in the area or in the surrounding areas, take little trips, and just discover new things that make me think or make me, you know, that joy factor again. And then I can relate it to back to my space, like the second series that I have, the Delta Fringe series. She's a coroner's daughter. So I had interviewed our Ada County coroner, county coroner. They actually spent 4 hours with me, took me around the whole coroner's office, the autopsy rooms, the freezers, they have a whole investigative team and anthropology lab. And it gave me great ideas on my character, how to write the book, how I was going to move it forward. They had told me stories of investigations that they had gone through, like closed door mysteries kind of thing. And so in every book in my Delta Fringe series, I add two mysteries to that. So that was one way of, I don't think I would have ever written a book about a coroner, you know, if I hadn't experienced that. And obviously that's not, I don't work for a coroner. I just have contacts there. So I knew people there that would help me out. So just getting outside, that's why travel is a big one, obviously. But if you can't afford to travel, you know, travel and experience things in your own city or area that that you can, it just gets the mind flowing, your creative juices flowing, and then take notes on what you hear, what people say, conversations that might be interesting. You may not know what, how they're going to relate to what you're going to do later on, but they are, they might be the seed of something, you know, a year or 6 months down the road.
So when you do something like that and you talked about taking notes, how do you take notes? Do you have a little notebook and write them down, or do you use a recording device?
I do. I have probably a million notebooks. I'm exaggerating, but my husband thinks I do. Yes, I write. I always have a notebook with me, and I have, I don't carry a purse anymore. Because I always have a notebook with me or a book to read while I'm, you know, in a doctor's appointment or something. So I wear a backpack everywhere I go. That's my purse now. And now that I am going to the university, I fit in. Because before, you know, everybody thought I was just like, you know, worker, you know, because I wasn't a, you know, like a briefcase. I just went straight to the backpack, so it's easier on my back. So I take a notebook everywhere. I've gotten better over the years at just using one notebook and writing notes throughout the year, one notebook per year, because I had like three or four notebooks at a time going. I thought maybe I should do by subject. I should just have a notebook for reading and notebook for writing and notebook for traveling. And then I had all these half-written notebooks everywhere and it was disorganized. So now I get a nice notebook every year and I read through it every once in a while when I need some ideas or want to remember something. I write my mastermind notes in there and we keep each other accountable. And it's just everything goes in there. Notes to do, goals. I put my goals in there. I put what I've already accomplished in there. So for the bad days, I have one resource. I have one notebook that has something I can read through and say, oh, I did do this. I did do this despite how I feel right now. And then I have a place to write things, ideas down. And I have my goals right there in front of me so I can keep on track.
Yeah, I love that. There's so much good stuff there too, because I think it's really important to have all the ideas and everything that we kind of try to keep track of in one place, because it's easy to find then. And the other thing I loved is taking the time to actually write down what you've achieved. And, you know, in doing so, it's kind of a mini celebration, but then it lets you go back and reflect on that when you are in a situation where you think, oh, you know, today was a waste of time, and you feel like beating yourself up because you haven't done what you set out to do, or maybe you're not feeling well or whatever it might be. But then you can look back and say, well, you know, there's a hell of a lot of good stuff here that I've written down that, unfortunately, our mind kind of suppresses that in that moment.
It does.
So it's good to remind ourselves.
Yes.
Well, this is great. Heather, I could go on for ages on creativity, and I think we've touched a little bit on some of the lessons in business, but it's probably a good time now to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and it probably is a little bit more business-oriented now, but it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions, and hopefully we'll get some really insightful answers that will inspire people to go and do something awesome today.
Well, let's hope so.
Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Yeah. So the number one thing is, the number one question is, what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
So that's where I am a big proponent, as I've mentioned, of traveling and get to know, even for businesses. We have an innovative fair at the university this week, and we have had people from all over the country come to talk about innovations and borrowing innovations. You can borrow IP from NASA. You can borrow IP from universities. So all those new experiences and from traveling and talking to new people, get out of your comfort zone, your what you're used to, the people that you talk to every day. I think it really helps you see more of a bigger picture and see things that you might be missing in your own little bubble.
Mm. Yeah, that's great advice. And I like the idea of borrowing IP from particularly those areas that, you know, I think we'd all recognize as very innovative, mm-hmm. and creative. And the idea of learning from those ideas or learning from that IP and seeing how that might be applied in a different environment is always a good one. And that's I think what travel brings as well. You sort of see things in a different environment that are new, and if you can take the concept and apply it to your environment, it always brings up something innovative.
Right. Yep.
So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Other than the traveling, which we've already mentioned, I think the best thing that has happened to me for new ideas is having a mentor. I never really thought about it in the beginning of my business, having mentors. I had editor friends, but having Azul as a mentor, first as a book coach and now as a leadership mentor, has helped immensely, because you can have someone professional, someone who's been there to bounce ideas off of, who gets to know you, and he knows what questions to ask me to get me going in the right direction without, you know, telling me, maybe that's the wrong thing to do. You know, he'll just ask questions, and he knows the right questions. And there's different kind of mentors and coaches. I also have a life coach, and that kind of helps with the whole rounded, you know, all aspects of life. And I think mentors and coaches are probably one of the best, newest things other than traveling that have helped me over the years.
Yeah, well, that's great advice. And I mean, I can imagine Azul would be a really good mentor. And there's lots of people around that have done things and are quite willing to help. So it's really just a case of identifying someone who's a good fit and asking.
Right.
And even what you mentioned earlier about your editor friends, or going and visiting, a coroner's lab that that you knew somebody who could get you introduced, just to see those things and get some guidance there around how do things work in here, which is something that you're interested in.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people will talk to you if you just tell them that you're a writer or a business person and you just want to see how their business works. Most of those people are very willing to talk to you and to give you ideas. And so that's helpful.
Yeah. Great. All right. Now, do you have a favorite resource that you use most often? We've talked about mind maps and we've talked about your notebook. Mm-hmm. Is there something else?
Probably... I would say as a resource, probably Scrivener for my writing. It's a program mostly for Mac, but I used it early on because NaNoWriMo gave it out free when you finish a book. And it has helped me get organized over the years, and to I'm able to like make fiction Bibles, you know, like with all the different details in there. So I just copy over one. So I have like all five books in one Scrivener file. So I have everything all in one. So as a productivity resource, I think that's probably my favorite.
Okay, great. All right. And what's the best way to keep a project on track? If you start writing a book, how do you keep yourself on track?
Yeah, that's my word of the year. I usually figure three words that are kind of my words for the year to work on. And one of them this year is focus. And because you can go on rabbit trails, especially as a writer or a business person, because you see the next shiny book you want to write or the next business that you want to start. And I think focus is the best way to keep yourself on track, keep reminding yourself what you are trying to accomplish. Maybe even having to niche down smaller so that your idea or your business is more focused, so that it is more manageable, so that you can keep on track. Because if you have something that's huge and unmanageable, you're going to just be running in circles.
Yeah, there's lots of good advice there. And of course, I mean, focus, the power of focus. I've written quite a few blog posts on that. And each time when I kind of have this intense focus on focus, if you like, it highlights to me how productive all of a sudden you do become. And of course, I'm a big proponent of niching down and being really clear on who you actually help and where you do your best work. So that's great. And with your notebooks and having the goals written down in the notebook, though, I think that's another way to keep that focus really sharp, because you can always go back, have a look at, well, what are my goals? And is this activity that I'm doing right now serving achieving those goals or not? And I find that a good way to kind of challenge the shiny object syndrome when it pops its head up.
Yes, which it does often.
Which it does all the time.
Especially.
All right. Well, what's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Well, as a person who was raised quite differently and I've had quite a diverse background, I think that you need to trust to know yourself, know your business, and know that even though other people that might have the same kind of business, you are the unique person for that business or for that book that you're writing, or however you're trying to differentiate yourself. You are a unique person. So you need to play on those strengths, not try to be someone else. I mean, we always learn from other people, but when it comes to differentiating ourselves, we need to, for lack of a better wording, be ourselves, play on our strengths. And like I've had to accept the fact over the years that I always feel like a split person, because I love nature and I love space exploration, and you just have to, I've had to accept that and use that to make myself different in that space. I write young adult science fiction space opera, and it's a very, very, very small niche, and my goal is to grow it. And I think that the best way for me to do it is to make sure that I'm being true to myself, and to a lot of people write to write for the market, and I can do both, but my heart is to differentiate myself by growing that small niche because of the diverse past that I do have and the experiences that I have had that are different than the person next to me, you know.
Yeah, well, there's quite a bit of really great advice in there. I think the, you know, that there's a lot of value in looking for models and learning from models. And you mentioned mentors earlier, that, you know, the value they can bring to you as a person and in business, but at the same time, using those learnings to play to your own strengths rather than trying to be that other person.
Right. Yeah.
Which I always find amusing when people kind of go down that path of trying to be like somebody else. And I think that must be so draining.
Right.
To constantly
try to be someone else.
They're like an actor. Yeah, they're like an actor 100% of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine.
All right. Well, thanks, Heather. This has been really great. Now, where can people find out more about you and maybe even get in touch to say thank you for what you've shared today?
Well, I have a website, which is www.heatherleedyer.com. Apparently, there's a lot of Heather Dyers out there that write, so I have to put my middle name in there. Yeah. I'm also pretty active on my Facebook author page, Heather Lee Dyer, YA author. And Instagram is Heather Lee Dyer. So they're all pretty easy to find.
We'll put links to all of those in the show notes as well, so people can just click straight through.
Thank you.
Now, what parting advice would you leave our listener, in particular to, you know, business owners who want to be a leader in innovation and perhaps be more creative?
We've gone through a lot in this time together, but I think perseverance is probably would be my parting advice, because you can't give up. If it's something that brings you joy, that you know that you're wanting to do, and you're looking for innovation or you want to be a leader in your field, you can't give up. The only difference, and I don't know who said this, it's probably been attributed to several different people, but difference between people who succeed and those who don't succeed are the ones that do succeed didn't give up. They're not necessarily more brilliant or more special than anybody else, but they just didn't give up. So that would be my parting advice. It's just keep going. If it's something you're believing in and it's in your heart and gives you joy, just keep going, because life is going to happen and you're going to have to just push through it.
That's right. And I think, you know, you touched again on the aspect of joy there, which I think is a big one and big value of yours. And I think there's great value in asking yourself that question. You know, we talked about Marie Kondo before. Does it bring me joy? And when you're doing things and, you know, you're pushing through some issues you might be having in terms of setbacks, to have that perseverance and ask that question, well, you know, this brings me joy, so I'm going to keep going.
Yes.
Great advice. All right. Well, finally then, Heather, who would you like me to chat with on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
My friend Amanda Turner, because she is a New York Times bestselling author of humor books and travel humor books. But not only that, her and her husband are, they're going to be launching a new business soon. And it's very, I think they're going to call it The Business of Us. And it should be up in the next couple of weeks, I think. And it's to help others, other business people, other entrepreneurs, kind of a, I don't know if you could call it a holistic approach to business. The whole aspect of every part of your life needs to be addressed if you're going to be successful in business. So I think their idea is amazing, and they're very motivated, amazing people with her travel books. She gets paid to travel with her family and then write books. So she's she's a very multifaceted, amazing person.
Okay, well, I will get an introduction from you to Amanda, and look forward to having her on the podcast, because it sounds fascinating. Getting paid to travel and then writing books about it, that sounds something that would bring me joy.
Yes. So,
yes. Look forward to having a chat with her. So thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us today so generously, Heather. I've really enjoyed this and been inspired by your journey and how you've overcome, you know, the setbacks you've had in your childhood and your health issues, and moved forward and, you know, created such wonderful novels and then switched over to the non-fiction genre. So are there any more non-fiction books coming up, or are you going back to fiction?
No, I was hoping this year also, but I'm hoping to at least release one non-fiction book a year. It probably in the same series, Creativity Over Perfection. So maybe next year. This was a rough year for me this year. So yes, I'm hoping so, along with my fiction books.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye out for those. So all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Thanks. It's been fun.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and engaging conversation with Heather and took something away from her episode. I found her story quite inspiring. She's certainly overcome quite a bit of adversity and still deals with her lupus condition every day, yet is able to find joy in her work and in helping others find joy in writing. I'd love to know what you took away from Heather's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Heather Lee Dyer. That is HeatherLeeDyer. Or lowercase, or one word, innovabiz.co/Heather Lee Dyer. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Heather there, as well as links to her website, her social media pages, her books, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Heather suggested that we have a conversation with New York Times best-selling author Amanda Turner on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So, Amanda, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Heather Lee Dyer. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. But most importantly, it will give you absolute clarity about your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery, or help with podcast production, then send me an email to jurgen@innovabiz.co and we'll set up a quick call just to get to know one another. Tune in again next week to the InnovaBuzz podcast. We've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including Bob Dick, a change consultant, and Richard Everett of Everett Coaching. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jurgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.